part of the BRI, Colombia recently announced its intention to join, while Brazil has expressed serious interest in doing the same. Chinese investments, particularly in renewable energy and infrastructure, continue to grow, significantly boosting local economic development. It is ironic that accusations of China's alleged predatory interest in Latin America come from Washington, which for decades has treated the region as its backyard, routinely intervening to protect its own interests. Given this historical context, it is even more striking that General Richardson has proposed the new Marshall Plan for the region as a means of countering Chinese influence. After all, the application of the Marshall Plan in Cold War-era Europe was directly tied to intervention in domestic affairs. In the 2000s, Latin America's economic recovery was closely tied to its growing synergy with China, which became an indispensable trading partner following its accession to the WTO. Over time, this partnership expanded beyond trade, fostering deeper cooperation through mechanisms such as the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States China Forum. The mass participation of Latin American and Caribbean countries in the BRI underscores this growing relationship. With investments in infrastructure and renewable energy projects further strengthening these ties. As a result, statements from U.S. officials are unlikely to resonate with Latin American countries. Their claims lack credibility when contrasted with the tangible cooperation between China and Latin America and do not reflect the U.S. own record in the region. China-Latin American ties have been built on mutual respect and non-interference, extending beyond trade to include investments, technology, as well as cultural and educational exchanges. China and Latin America share a history of resisting colonialism and exploitation by foreign powers and are now aligned in promoting a multipolar world order. The rhetoric of a new Cold War driven by neo-filibusters alongside the revival of the Monroe Doctrine stands in direct opposition to Latin America's aspirations for sovereignty and cooperative development.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson helped to create awareness about the problems of alcoholism as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here on A to Z. So, we are talking about how we should create awareness about the problems and the negative repercussions of alcoholism as part of our Islamic lifestyle. I'm sure you will be asking, because you are all intelligent people. So the first question that would come up is, how is creating awareness about anything a part of our Islamic lifestyle? Well, as you know, we don't have a lot of time on the program to be able to talk in depth about some of these questions that you ask. But just to give a very short answer, this creating awareness about anything, whether it's something good or something bad, it is actually called Amal bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, in one scope of this Islamic pillar, right? To encourage good and to prohibit evil. So in order to encourage good and prohibit evil, well, we have to create awareness about both good and evil. And so that's how it's connected to our Islamic lifestyle, because, well, it's a pillar of Islam. So creating awareness about the problems of alcoholism, the negative repercussions of alcoholism, is something that is a part of our Islamic lifestyle. We should not expect that the society around us, if it is doing something that is wrong and we stay silent about it or we stay hidden about it, that certain wrong thing, that wrong thing won't affect us or our families or our children. No, it definitely will, whether we say something or we don't. But when we say something, at least we are pushing back the evil that is trying to infiltrate our homes and our families. And even if we're not, you know, God forbid, successful in preventing that infiltration, at least on the Day of Judgment, well, we can stand, you know, in the court of justice of the Almighty Allah and tell Him that, listen, you know, we tried to do something. We tried to take a stand. Now, we could not succeed or win. Well, that's a different story, but we did our responsibility. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about these great concepts in as little time as possible. So we're talking about creating awareness about alcoholism. Now, alcoholism has a lot of very serious and multiple different kinds of harms and bad effects and negative effects, and it really destroys the individual, the family unit, as well as the society. In some way or the other, we should try to make these things known to the people around us, to our friends, to our coworkers, you know, in a civil, friendly, compassionate manner. You know, so we're not trying to, you know, put anybody down, but, you know, at least in a compassionate manner, let people know that there's various ills that are attached to alcoholism. And, you know, over 1,000 years ago, Imam Ridha alayhi salam, he says that Allah, the Almighty, forbade alcohol because the corruption that accompanies alcohol and the drinking of alcohol and intoxication at any level, right? It talks about how it alters the drinker's reason. It encourages the drinker to deny Allah, to slander the Messenger of Allah, and, of course, all of the other accompaniments of corruption and murder that come around with the drinking of alcohol. And if we look at modern day societies, we will find that many of the murders, many of the crimes, many of the domestic violence issues, child abuse issues, these shooting sprees, in one way or the other, they are connected to alcohol. And so in whatever manner we can, we should try to help our societies, help our families, help our friends, help the people around us in order to, you know, be able to help them, and do this by creating awareness about alcoholism in our Islamic lifestyle. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
In the Limelight.
Regional countries came out in support of the Islamic Republic of Iran and united in their condemnation of the Tel Aviv regime's blatant aggression against the Islamic Republic, while reaffirming Tehran's legitimate right to defend itself. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. In response to Israel's new act of aggression against Iran, many countries around the world rallied behind the Islamic Republic, strongly denouncing the breach of international law. Israeli missile strikes targeted Iranian military sites in the border provinces of Ilam and Khuzestan and the capital city of Tehran, but failed to make a significant impact. The airstrikes were effectively intercepted and countered by Iran's integrated air defense system. Israeli mouthpieces tried to justify the aggression under the label of retaliatory strikes, forgetting that Iran's Operation True Promise 2 was in response to a series of assassination of resistance icons. Regional countries came out in support of Iran and united in their condemnation of the Tel Aviv regime's blatant aggression, while reaffirming Tehran's legitimate right to defend itself. Statements from Saudi Arabia, Russia, Turkey, Malaysia, Oman, Pakistan, Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Lebanon and Kuwait underscored the success of Iran's pragmatic diplomacy, as well as its stupendous success in the military arena. These nations, while condemning the Israeli aggression forthright, called on the international community to take decisive measures to end its long-standing impunity. Saudi Arabia was one of the first countries to express its condemnation and denunciation of the Israeli strikes against the Islamic Republic, while calling for de-escalation of tensions. Russia warned of an explosive escalation in the region after the Israeli aggression. Turkey condemned the Israeli regime for bringing the region to the brink of a wider war. Malaysia, the first country to issue a statement following the Tel Aviv regime's aggression, called for an immediate cessation of Israeli hostilities and an end to the cycle of violence. Oman, a close ally of Iran and mediator of regional conflicts, described the Zionist regime's aggression as a blatant violation of Iran's sovereignty and a clear breach of international law. Pakistan also denounced Israeli aggression as a danger to the path of regional peace. Pakistan said, "These strikes undermine the path to regional peace and stability and also constitute a dangerous escalation in an already volatile region." Iraq denounced global inaction against Israel's expansion of aggressive policies in West Asia. Iraq added, "The occupying Zionist regime continues its aggressive policies and widening the conflict in the region through blatant attacks that it carries out with impunity." Pertinently, Iraqi authorities lodged a complaint to the United Nations on Monday, 28th of October, over Israel's use of its airspace to strike Iran, calling it a flagrant violation of Iraq's sovereignty. Meanwhile, Syria slammed the Israeli regime's act of aggression against the Islamic Republic, underlying Iran's legitimate right to defend itself, protect its territories and the lives of its citizens. Jordan, which previously had downed some Iranian drones in April, described the Israeli strikes against Iran as a violation of international laws, calling on the international community to assume its responsibilities and take immediate measures to impose a halt to the Israeli aggression. Qatar considered the Israeli aggression against Iran as a blatant violation of Iran's sovereignty and a clear breach of the principles of international law. The United Arab Emirates put forth a call to strengthen dialogue, uphold international laws, and respect the sovereignty of nations. Lebanon, which has been reeling under Israeli attacks for months now, condemned Israeli aggression against Iran. Lebanon stated these attacks constitute a violation of Iran's sovereignty and a serious threat to regional and international security and peace. Kuwait slammed the Israeli regime for endangering the security of the region. Following the widespread condemnation of Israeli aggression by regional and extra-regional countries, analysts contend that Iran's foreign policy, anchored in principles of good neighborliness, interaction and dialogue, along with unwavering support for the oppressed in Gaza and Lebanon, has facilitated Tehran's proactive engagement on both regional and international fronts. According to experts, central to Iran's diplomatic strategy is a commitment to fostering constructive relationships with neighboring countries, which was demonstrated in recent weeks by Iran's top diplomat, Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, as he toured several countries across the region despite threats. This approach reflected Tehran's understanding that regional stability and prosperity are interlinked. Experts point out to the recent engagements of Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi as well as Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian, particularly during regional tours and high-level international forums such as the BRICS summit in Kazan in Russia, as evidence of Iran's dedication to enhancing cooperation, expediting existing agreements, and promoting a secure and prosperous environment. Referring to the United Arab Emirates President Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan's desire to visit Iran, underscoring the importance of independently resolving bilateral issues while eschewing external interference, analysts said that by prioritizing open dialogue with regional countries, Tehran has made significant progress in bridging gaps with neighboring countries and fostering mutual trust. The reliance on dialogue-centric diplomacy is consistent with Iran's broader policy of good neighborliness, which frames relationships not in terms of competition, but through shared interests, as well as demonstrated by the late president, Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, and the current president, Masoud Pezeshkian. The English website of Kayhan newspaper, a Tehran-based English-language newspaper, has also covered the same story. Experts identify Iran's unwavering support for the oppressed people in Gaza and Beirut as a key factor in its ascendance as a leading player in regional dynamics, saying that unlike some nations that offer only verbal solidarity, Iran has consistently backed its commitments with tangible actions. According to commentators, this commitment was evident recently when Iran launched a barrage of 200 missiles in a retaliatory operation, dubbed Operation True Promise 2, aimed at avenging the blood of assassinated resistance leaders and the victims of Israeli genocide. Only a few days after the operation, Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, arrived at Beirut's Rafik Hariri International Airport for a regional tour, where he reaffirmed the Islamic Republic's support for the resistance axis and the people of Gaza and Beirut amid ongoing Israeli airstrikes. Experts suggest that Iran's consideration for the oppressed is evident in its measured response to recent Israeli provocations, particularly in the context of Operation True Promise 2. They also point to the statement issued by the General Staff of the Armed Forces following Israeli strikes, which emphasized the Islamic Republic's right to deliver a lawful and legitimate response while underscoring the urgent need for a sustainable ceasefire in both Gaza and Lebanon.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in Hull.
Tour the pitch.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of your favorite station,
Youth Station.
She's Asma and I'm Zainab.
And we're going to have a very interesting episode together. Once again, we're home. As for today, we're going to talk about, could there be any universal code for every youth in today's world? Like, now that we know that there are different cultures or different backgrounds, different even geographical locations, could we have one same universal code for morality, for religion, for everything?
To answer generally, no, but particularly or rarely in some cases, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would explain that this way. Like, different people come from different cultures and different expectations, different priorities, different rules, different upbringings and all. You can't have one rule for all. But when it comes to humanity, and when it comes to striking humanity, for example, I'll give you an example. We saw people being bombarded in Gaza. We saw people being bombarded in Lebanon.
And we still see.
And we still continue to see, unfortunately. Yet, we have this one call, one law in Islam to stand against oppression, right?
Yeah.
So, but right now, I don't think it's just the Muslims who are standing or calling out against oppression. We saw in the universities of, like, I would say,
Western universities.
Western university, yeah. We saw, like, how even non-Muslims, who were not even Muslims, how they came up and stood for oppression. So, yes, when it comes to humanity, I think
there could be some set of rules that could bring us together.
Let live and, you know, I don't know, just a bombardment is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Let's leave and let other leave.
Yeah.
Actually, pretty much important to know that having a universal code needs unity. And still, today's world lacks this unity.
Unity, indeed.
And by the way, when we speak of unity, we do not mean that all the people have got the same color.
Yeah.
All the people have got the same culture, the same nationalities. No, for sure. No dumb person would claim that.
Yeah.
Like, the world is beautiful with all its varieties.
Yeah.
And all these differences make it all beautiful. But then, as you just said it, sometimes when it comes to humanity, humanity is the anchoring point that actually brings us all together and make us united.
Yeah.
And this unity is going to be based on humanity. And I guess since Islam cares too much about humanity, and as we have it in the Holy Book of Quran, it's actually the sum of all of the religions. All of them are one, and that one is Islam. And Islam could bring us all together.
Yeah, so let's stay together and let's have break only for a break. Let's take a short break here. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. Imam Hussein al-Islam said, if you don't have a religion, at least be free.
I love this quote.
Welcome back. You're listening to Iran Radio. By the way, she's Asma. I'm Zainab.
Yeah, again, thank you. Yes, this is Youth Station. And we're talking about, could there be any universal moral code for all the people of all around the world with different colors, different nationalities, different cultures?
Well, so far we talked about living
the fact that,
yeah.
Well, there couldn't be such a thing, because how could you apply the rule for all the people And nobody wants that, such a universal ruling system.
Yeah. But then, we say when it comes to Islam, like, for example, Islam said a rule that stand against oppression. And we as Muslims do stand against oppression. But we said that anyone who has a, like, small kind of humanity within them, or like they are free people, they also, we saw that, the world witnessed that, that there was different kind of attitude that people stood against mm-hmm. oppression, even being from different cultures and different religions. So yeah, sometimes these the universal law does apply, but it was like something that again mm-hmm. roots back to Islam.
Now, if we come into deeper,
the rules, of the world now.
Yeah, and now if it comes to some deeper layers, I would put it this way, that even if you come to scrutinize over the fact that, okay, how different I would be from an Indian girl with a different culture, a different background or whatever, but then when we sit together, we come to this point that we are united in the way we actually look at humanity, in the way we define human beings, even if we have different religion. You know what I mean? I mean, it goes beyond that even.
Yeah, I think the biggest display of this is in Arbaeen itself, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah.
So, like, so many different cultures. Maybe you won't see that many cultures ever yeah. on any other part of the earth.
It's a unique stuff that happens there.
Yeah, so, just united with one love. Mm-hmm. You know, as we have these hashtags going on our brain always, Hussein unites them.
Exactly.
Hussein unites all. So, yeah.
Same destination, different colors, different cultures, different backgrounds.
I don't think it's rules. I don't think there's a universal laws that can unite us. But yes, Ahlul Bayt can.
Exactly.
But yes,
Islam
can.
Ahlul Bayt can.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala can.
And the love for them can. The love that we have for them could bring us all together and unite us. And since the core of their attention is humanity, so we would all look at the same destination.
Yeah, we do. And like all the people of the world are now looking at this excess of resistance. And mm-hmm. this resistance was not something that could, that rooted from some, I would say, mm-hmm. political branch. It was something that rooted from Islamic law to stand against oppression.
And by the way, whenever I see all these problems and miseries that are happening all around the world, and by the way, when I come to ponder more upon this fact that there are so much of miseries and problems all around the world, I can't help myself but thinking about Imam Mahdi, ajalallahu farajah, like the dream and the hope that we have for his reappearance looks like exactly this universal unity that we're caring for and we're searching for.
Yeah.
Like we, the Shia, believe that once he's actually there, but once he reappears, the entire world is going to go through a drastic change. We all human beings with different nationalities and different colors and cultures are going to come together and to be united for the same purpose and towards the same direction, that is peace, humanity in its utmost format and version, and also caring for each other. Like all the lost concepts are going to reappear and come to the surface once more.
Yeah. Having talked of Imam Mahdi ajalallahu ta'ala farajah, there are a lot of things coming into my mind. But let's take a short break here and we'll be back in a while. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Iran Radio and
Youth Station.
Yeah, she's Asma. And I'm Zainab, and this is Youth Station, and we're discussing about the universal law. Well, in general, we said that maybe there's no, when it comes to rules or laws, there's nothing something that could be put universally, except for the law of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, except for the love of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam that, unites us all. And also,
this is the thing that only the infallibles can do.
Yeah. Asma, you talked of Imam Mahdi ajalallahu ta'ala farajah, and While you were talking about this, I was thinking that when it comes to laws and rules, even if they have to be applied, like as in governments, as in Ethiopia and all, I think it's only the Mehtavi Ethiopia, the Mehtavi government, that would apply a new universal
exactly.
law, basically.
So that's our thought, the way we'll look at everything, the way we see the future. We have a dream, and that green dream is that one day, whenever there is a dead end in everything that we see all around the world and all the news, the only thing that acts as a ray of hope is that we still have each other, and we have this dream at the back of our mind that he is there, and once he reappears, everything is going to change drastically. Everything is going to meet its true direction.
Yeah.
So again, as you were saying, that the love of Imam Hussein alayhi salam would bring all the people from different nationalities together, the same thing would happen when Imam Mahdi ajalallahu farajah is going to reappear. His love and his call for peace is going to unite us all.
Yeah, and that gives me this concept from like other religions. I have friends in, I don't know, Hindu culture. I have friends in Sikh culture. I've seen them all. Like they have, that's called Kripal. They have this Kripal, that's a small sword kind of thing. And they always keep it, the Sikhs, they always keep it with them. And they're always in this ready to go situation. Because they say like, whenever our imam is going to come, they don't say the word imam, they say guru. So when our guru is going to come, it means the same leader, imam.
Yeah.
When he's going to come, he is in need of soldiers. So we're in a ready situation. I happened to ask a Hindu friend, she said, Lord Krishna is going to come back and he's going to fill the world with justice as it's filled with injustice and stuff.
So I guess all the world have got their own mythologies about these things, about the one person who comes and solves all the problems.
Is Imam Mahdi and their hopes were towards him, and their hopes that he's going to be the one who's going to, you know, actually unite us all. And he has actually united us all already.
Exactly.
But then, like,
there are the hints.
Hoping for the world full of justice, and
after getting towards corruption and destruction,
and
this
concept that in his time. Everyone would be like financially stable. Sometimes, it surprises me seeing the divisions in the society, especially the financial divisions,
exactly,
classes in the society. I happen to ask myself, is that really possible someday? Mm-hmm. That
it's unbelievable for us right now.
Yeah, because it's not tangible really,
mm-hmm.
but that's going to be a universal law that there's going to be no poor and all are going to have equal amount of wealth.
You know, and when people see that truth in front of them, I guess everything would happen to be voluntarily. Like the people who are wealthy voluntarily would wish to share their money with the poor. That's why the society is going to be wiped out from the poor people, because the wealthy people are going to care for them.
You actually interpret religion properly. You understand that religion is equal to charity. Religion,
exactly.
Prayers go
caring, protectiveness.
Prayers go hand in hand with charity. Whatever we have, stand up for salat. We have stand up for zakat. We also have zakat.
You must pay your share to the society you're living in.
If you have a lot of financial wealth, you know it's not you who owns it. It's the society who owns it. And
you're just a mediator.
Mediator. And your test is to distribute among them. And that universal law of being everyone equal financially is going to be applied only when he comes.
Only when he comes, yeah. So still, we're wishing for that bright day to come in which equality, justice, and peace would be a prevailing common thing we tweet about.
Yeah, and these will become the universal laws. We are really waiting for that day.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hesitate here to say, Allahumma ajjal li waliyyika al-faraj.
For sure.
May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala hasten the reappearance of Imam.
Yeah, inshallah. And we all pray for that to happen, inshallah. And I hope you have just enjoyed today's episode. This was all that we had to share. Until another session, I bid you farewell and leave you to God's never-slipping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings. Be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Donald Trump's Madison Square Garden rally has been overshadowed by his allies' crude and racist remarks. The event in Deep Blue, New York City, was designed to mark the start of Trump's closing argument in the final days of the campaign. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. The national broadcaster NBC News has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump delivered his standard lines on topics from immigration to the economy on Sunday, 27th of October, at a packed rally at Madison Square Garden, an event that was designed to be the start of his closing argument 9 days out from Election Day on 5th of November. But Donald Trump's remarks in his hometown of New York City, which went for more than an hour, were overshadowed by comments made by warm-up speakers in the roughly 5 hours before his prime-time address. They included a comedian's racist jokes about Latinos and black Americans and were condemned by multiple Republican members of Congress, as well as speakers who used increasingly inflammatory language to describe Vice President Kamala Harris. At the world's most famous arena and before one of his largest rally crowds of the cycle, Donald Trump railed against opponents he sees as the enemy within, describing the media as the enemy of the people, and referred to Kamala Harris's low IQ and described her as a vessel for those aforementioned opponents. Trump said, "It's just this amorphous group of people, but they're smart and they're vicious, and we have to defeat them." Trump was explaining his use of the term the enemy from within. He continued by saying, "And when I say the enemy from within, the other side goes crazy. They've done very bad things to this country. They're indeed the enemy from within, but this is who we're fighting." David Rem, who announced his candidacy for mayor of New York on stage, echoed a rallygoer who called Harris the devil and added that she is the Antichrist. Conservative media personality Tucker Carlson joked that Kamala Harris, who is black and of Indian descent, would be the first Samoan-Malaysian low IQ former California prosecutor ever to be elected U.S. president. But no comments generated more attention than an opening routine from comedian Tony Hinchcliffe, who spoke early in the afternoon. His jokes targeted Puerto Rico, describing it as a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Then he told a joke about how he and a black friend carved watermelons together. There was an uncomfortable reception to his punchlines in the arena. Within hours of his remarks, multiple pro-Trump GOP members of Congress condemned him. Representative Maria Elvira Salazar, Republican of Florida, said she was disgusted by his racist comment calling Puerto Rico a floating island of garbage, adding the rhetoric does not reflect Republican values. Senator Rick Scott, Republican of Florida, said the joke bombed for a reason, was not funny and not true. And Representative Carlos Jimenez, Republican of Florida, said Hinchcliffe's comments were completely classless and in poor taste. I'm proud to be a Puerto Rican, Representative Anthony Desposito, Republican of New York, who's locked in a competitive House race, posted on X. My mother was born and raised in Puerto Rico. It's a beautiful island with a rich culture and an integral part of the United States. The only thing that's garbage was a bad comedy set. Stay on message. The Trump campaign sought to distance itself from comedian Tony Hinchcliffe's routine. In a statement, senior advisor Daniel Alvarez said, "This joke does not reflect the views of President Trump or the campaign." The Trump campaign had hyped up the event as what amounted to Trump's final pitch to voters in the closing days of the election. And he did offer some new policy positions from the stage, among them what he would support a tax credit for family caregivers who take care of a parent or loved one, which comes as Kamala Harris has heavily promoted her proposal to expand Medicare to allow it to cover long-term in-home care. Homing in on his core immigration pitch, Donald Trump also said he wants any migrant who kills someone in the United States to face the death penalty. And he offered insight into his thinking about how Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the former independent presidential candidate who is backing Trump's bid, would fit into a future Trump administration. Kennedy would go wild on health, Trump said. I'm going to let him go wild on the food. I'm going to let him go wild on medicines. The national broadcaster CBS News has also covered this same story. Thousands of people from around New York area and other parts of the country descended on Madison Square Garden in New York City on Sunday afternoon, 27th of October, for former President Donald Trump's campaign rally. The New York Police Department said it had drones over the area, robots and a helicopter, as well as anti-terrorism units outside monitoring the situation to keep everyone safe. With just 9 days to go until Election Day on 5th of November, a new CBS News opinion poll has two presidential candidates neck and neck, with Vice President Kamala Harris at 50% and Donald Trump at 49% among likely voters. In battleground states, both are polling at 50%. The focus of their respective campaigns has been on issues including immigration, Israel's war in the Gaza Strip, and crime. Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, Elon Musk, and Melania Trump all spoke at the rally. Sunday's rally marked a detour from the battleground states for Trump. When Trump entered the arena, there was applause, a standing ovation, and the crowd started chanting. Every seat appeared to be filled from the floor to the highest sections. In his remark, Trump framed Vice President Kamala Harris as a train wreck and said electing her would gamble with the lives of millions of Americans. His speech included familiar campaign lines about immigration, his deportation plans, crime, the border with Mexico, and the economy. Trump said, "We will rapidly defeat inflation and we will very simply make America affordable again." And you know who I want to thank? New York City Mayor Eric Adams, because Mayor Adams has been treated pretty badly. You know, when he said this whole thing with the migrants coming into New York, this is just not sustainable. I said, well, he's going to be indicted by these lunatics. A year later, he got indicted, Trump said. He also played a video montage that included stories about migrants in gangs allegedly committing violent crimes across the country. Trump added, it's called Trendagua, and now they've even taken over Times Square. On day one, I will launch the largest deportation program in American history to get the criminals out. And those who took the stage before the former president spoke were vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance and billionaire Trump supporter Elon Musk. In a surprise, Melania Trump, Donald Trump's wife, also made an appearance and introduced her husband. It was her first public political speech on the campaign trail. Other speakers included Robert Kennedy Jr., former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, and television personality Dr. Phil McGraw.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of this speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a thousand of veterans and active members in the sacred defense and the resistance field. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 25th, 2024. The second topic that must be brought to the attention of today's audience is a report-like account of the war, a report of the war. I will share a few words with you today about reporting as well. Of course, as we are speaking, you, dear attendees, who are present in this meeting, along with the large audience listening from the distance, are the current audience listening to these words. However, you aren't the only audience. The younger generation of the future, your children, they all need to think, work, and learn about these things. These are the two topics that I will discuss briefly. There is also a third important topic that I won't have time to talk about today, and this is the benefits and the results that have come to us from this sacred defense. Fortunately, some of those who have spoken here today have alluded to this topic. Let's first consider the question, why did this war start? The reason behind the attack on Iran's borders wasn't limited to Saddam and the Ba'ath Party. Perhaps it could be said that the reason the leaders of the global order at that time attacked Iran's borders was much greater, or at least equal to Saddam's motives. In other words, there were two major powers in the world at that time, each with allies of their own. Those two powers were the United States and the former Soviet Union, and each had a number of allies consisting of governments and political systems. Almost all of them had some incentive in this matter.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Islamic Republic, Islamic Iran, was something unbearable for them. Why? The question is this. Why was the Islamic Iran unbearable for them? We hadn't taken any measures against anyone back then. At this time, they tell us, you supplied missiles to such and such place, or you gave drones to such and such place. But back then, there were no such allegations. So what was the underlying reason for their enmity? This is the main point. The reason was that at this critical point in the world, an unprecedented popular revolution had taken place, which presented a new way of thinking for managing the world. The prevailing order of that day couldn't tolerate this new way of thinking. That was the issue.
Allah, I wanna thank you. That you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Pro-Palestine and pro-Lebanon protests swept across Yemen after Friday prayers, with demonstrators reigniting support for the armed resistance against the Israeli regime in Gaza and Lebanon. The protesters celebrated the appointment of Sayyid Naeem Qassem as Hezbollah's new Secretary General, expressing hope that he will lead the Islamic resistance group in Lebanon towards its goal.
We came out today across the country in solidarity with the Axis of Resistance and the appointment of Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General, Sayyid Naeem Qassem. We say to him, carry forward the banner of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. We will support you, and you can always count on us.
We congratulate Hezbollah on the appointment of Sayyid Naeem Qassem as the new leader. We are confident he will carry forward the same message and the same method as Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah.
Protesters also expressed a willingness to cross borders and engage in direct combat with Israeli forces. For now, however, Yemen's drones and missiles, including hypersonic missiles, are capable of reaching Tel Aviv in less than 12 minutes.
By Allah, we are very eager to meet the Zionists directly on the battlefield. We are also eager to escalate our military operations against them. Their attacks only make us stronger and more determined.
The Yemeni attacks are calculated to denigrate Israel's economic stability and diminish its regional influence. As the conflict escalates, Yemen's forces continue to employ advanced military capabilities, challenging Israel and the West.
Another Friday of pro-Palestinian protests took place across the country after a series of military operations by Yemen's armed forces against Israeli interests across the region. The leader of Ansarullah says if the U.S. is unable to stop Yemen's military operations in the Red Sea, no one can. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
On Parliament Square, pro-Palestine activists hoisting the Palestinian flag and a banner that says it all.
Gaza must have food and water. The bombs must stop. We must stop arming Israel. They've got no right to do what they're doing. It's inhuman.
Days earlier, members of the Women Rising Coalition lined over 700 baby vests on Parliament Square in a powerful tribute to Gaza's thousands murdered infants. While the members of the parliament may look the other way, members of the public boldly manifest their solidarity.
Well, they have been protesting here every day across from the British Parliament for more than a week now. Their aim, as ever, they say, is to make the politicians inside confront the reality of their continued support for Israel.
In September, the new Labour government suspended a fraction of its arms sales to Israel, a move described by campaigners as an admission of guilt and a half-hearted gesture that will do nothing to end Israel's war crimes in Gaza.
This is aiding and abetting the war crimes, and history will tell that. They will be tried at the end of serving, because it's just so obvious what's happening.
Stop funding war crimes!
The five independent MPs in Parliament are echoing the demand being made here and by two-thirds of Britons. How long will the government that promised change be able to resist those calls? Saeed Purza, London.
Rights groups, unions, civil society organizations, and members of the public have gathered at Belfast City Hall to highlight the urgent need for Northern Ireland to establish hate crime legislation, as it is the only region in the UK without such measures.
There are families across the city and across Northern Ireland who are living in fear right now because of racist attacks, because simply they have become targets because of their skin colour, their nationality, their religion, their immigration status.
Muslim organisations and pro-Palestinian groups participated in the protest to support calls for accountability given the West's role in regional conflicts, including Israel's ongoing atrocities.
Well, we need to push UK government and America, because these are the two governments who are supporting the Zionist regime and give them the weapon and the political cover. So we need to challenge them. We need to stop that.
There is a demand for stronger protection for minority communities in Northern Ireland, with calls on politicians and police authorities to take action. The region has a growing Muslim population, partly due to wars elsewhere. Campaigners are demanding that more police are recruited in Northern Ireland to better protect those being targeted by far-right thugs. Businesses run by Syrians and Africans have been repeatedly attacked here in Northern Ireland. They come from countries that the West helped to destabilise. And so critics say foreign interference continues to fuel xenophobia, both here in the UK and in the EU. Jerome Hughes, Belfast.
I'm Jeremy Lofredo for The Grey Zone in Israel, where last...
Jeremy Lofredo is an investigative journalist with The Grey Zone website who was arbitrarily detained days after his video exposed damage incurred by Iran's operation to Israeli military facilities, including Nevatim Air Base in the Negev Desert.
I drove 70 miles south to the highly sensitive Air Force installation, aiming to document the underreported and potentially embarrassing destruction.
Lofredo also traveled to Tel Aviv for his reporting, described what he saw in the streets near the Israel spy agency Mossad's headquarters after it was hit by Iranian ballistic missiles.
Using visual clues from footage circulating online, I set out to locate where the missile may have landed. I saw a heavily damaged SUV, its windshield shattered, debris and concrete caked into the vehicle. Further down, the scene unfolded. Destroyed vehicles, torn up asphalt, and a massive crater, roughly 30 feet wide, recently filled in with dirt. This information is missing from all Israeli media reports due to the fact it's been officially censored.
Lofredo says the charges against him included providing information to the enemy during wartime, which, if convicted, carried